All right, get ready for today's deep dive, because we're going to time travel back to 1926.
1926?
To tackle a Supreme Court case.
Yeah.
That might seem a little fluffy.
Fluffy.
At first.
Yeah.
We're talking Weaver v. Palmer Bros.
Weaver v. Palmer Bros.
Yes.
Comforters.
You heard that right.
Uh-huh.
Comforters made it all the way to the highest court in the land.
You know what's fascinating about Weaver, though?
Yeah.
Is that it's not really about comforters at all.
Really?
It's a landmark case that grapples with these fundamental questions about public health,
ooh,
individual liberty,
right,
and the limits of government power.
Okay.
Questions that are just as relevant today as they were nearly a century ago.
Okay, so paint the picture for us.
Right.
What's the backstory here?
So imagine you're Palmer Bros.
Okay.
A company in Connecticut.
Okay.
Known for making comfy, cozy comforters.
Yeah.
Business is booming.
Well,
until suddenly, Pennsylvania decides to pass a law that throws a wrench in your operations. This law bans the use of something called shoddy.
Shoddy? Yeah. What is shoddy exactly?
Shoddy.
Sounds kind of shady.
It does have a bit of a negative ring to it, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
But shoddy is really just a term for reprocessed fabric scraps.
Okay.
Think of it as like early textile recycling.
Oh, okay.
And here's the kicker.
Uh-huh.
Palmer Bros.
Yeah.
Was sterilizing the shoddy they used.
Okay.
But the law banned it outright.
Yeah.
Sterilization or not.
Wow.
We're talking about over $188,000 of their sales at stake.
Oh my God.
A massive hit back then.
Wait, I'm confused.
Yeah.
If they were already sterilizing the shoddy, was Pennsylvania's problem?
Yeah.
Was the state just trying to protect local businesses or something?
That's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
The plot thickens. When you realize that the law itself allowed other secondhand materials,
okay,
like feathers or cotton, as long as they were sterilized.
Okay.
So why the harsh treatment specifically for shoddy?
Hmm. Sounds like there might be more to this story than meets the eye.
Yeah.
So Palmer Bros decided to fight back, right?
They did.
Took it all the way to the Supreme Court.
You bet they did.
Wow.
Palmer Bros argued that this blanket ban on shoddy, despite their sterilization processes, violated their 14th Amendment rights.
The 14th Amendment.
Specifically the right to due process and equal protection under the law.
Got it.
They were basically saying,
yeah,
if you allow sterilized feathers,
uh-huh,
you have to allow sterilized shoddy.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, I see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
So how did the Supreme Court handle this comforter conundrum?
Well,
whose side did they take?
The court actually sided with Palmer Bros.
Really?
But
interesting.
The decision wasn't a slam dunk.
Nah.
It involved some deep legal reasoning.
Oh.
About the balance between state power,
yeah,
and individual rights.
Got it.
This is where things get a bit technical.
Yeah.
And stick with me.
Yeah.
It's important.
All right. Lead the way.
Yeah.
We're all ears.
So the court acknowledged that states do have the power to regulate for public health.
Okay.
What we call police power.
Okay.
But the key here,
yeah,
is that those regulations can't be arbitrary or unreasonable.
Yeah.
They have to have a solid basis.
Makes sense.
And in this case,
uh-huh,
Pennsylvania couldn't convincingly prove that sterilized shoddy was uniquely dangerous.
Really?
Especially when they were already allowing other sterilized materials.
I see. So it wasn't just about whether shoddy could be a health hazard.
Right.
But whether Pennsylvania's law was actually a reasonable way to address that potential hazard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The court was essentially sending a message.
Okay.
Hey, you can't just ban something
yeah.
because you're a bit squeamish about it.
Uh-huh.
You need solid evidence to justify restricting someone's right to do business and earn a living.
Wow, that's a pretty strong statement from the court.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see why this case is considered a landmark decision.
Uh-huh.
But I know Supreme Court decisions aren't always unanimous.
Right.
Were there any dissenting voices in this case?
That's a great question, and it leads us to one of the most fascinating aspects of this case.
Okay.
Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes's dissenting opinion.
Oh, wow.
He argued that courts shouldn't be second-guessing lawmakers on matters of public health.
Okay.
He believed that if a legislature felt something posed even a potential risk,
okay,
the courts should defer to their judgment.
So Holmes was basically saying, let the lawmakers do their job,
uh-huh,
and let's not get the courts too involved in second-guessing their decisions.
You've got it.
Yeah.
Holmes felt that even if the evidence wasn't crystal clear,
yeah,
as long as the legislature had a reasonable basis for concern, the courts should step back.
Interesting.
It's a fascinating argument
Yeah.
that raises important questions about the role of the judiciary in reviewing legislative actions, especially those aimed at protecting public welfare.
So we've got this clash between the majority opinion emphasizing the need for reasonable and demonstrably justified regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And Holmes's dissent
right.
advocating for more deference to legislative decisions.
Yeah.
This is starting to feel like a legal thriller.
Right.
High stakes, mm-hmm. conflicting perspectives.
Oh, really?
And a decision that could have ripple effects for years to come.
You're absolutely right. And those ripple effects continue to be felt even today.
Wow.
This seemingly simple case about comforters set a precedent
uh-huh.
that continues to shape how we think about the balance between government power and individual liberty.
Yeah.
Especially in the realm of public health.
Okay, I'm hooked.
Great.
Now I really want to know how Weaver v. Palmer Bros. Is playing out in the 21st century.
Well,
yeah.
So let's fast forward from 1926 to today.
Okay.
Think about all the heated debates we see around things like vaccine mandates.
Oh, yeah.
Mask requirements.
Uh-huh.
Even environmental regulations.
Yeah.
These are all situations where the government is trying to protect public health, but those efforts often bump up against individual freedoms.
For sure.
And guess what? Weaver v. Palmer Bros. Is still cited in those debates.
Wow. I'm starting to see how this case about comforters is like a legal Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
Relevant to so many different scenarios.
Exactly.
It provides a framework for asking,
yeah.
is this regulation truly necessary?
Right.
Is it based on solid evidence?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just an overreach of government power?
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Weaver provides a kind of legal litmus test
okay.
for evaluating whether restrictions,
uh-huh.
even those aimed at protecting us,
right.
are actually justifiable.
Okay, but I'm curious, how much weight does Weaver actually carry in today's legal battles? Is it a slam dunk argument, or have things evolved since 1926?
Well, it's not a magic bullet.
Okay.
But Weaver is definitely still a major player in legal arguments about the balance between public health and individual rights.
Uh-huh.
It's been cited in countless cases, challenging everything from bans on trans fats to restrictions on vaping products.
Hold on, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So are you saying that a company trying to sell, say, a controversial new e-cigarette
yeah.
could actually use Weaver to argue against regulations?
They absolutely could,
oh.
and they often do.
Wow.
They would likely argue that the government hasn't provided sufficient evidence to justify restricting their product.
Okay.
Especially if similar products are already on the market.
Uh-huh.
They might even point to the fact that the law allows some vaping products, but not others.
Right.
Much like Pennsylvania's law allowed sterilized feathers, but not sterilized shoddy.
That's wild.
Yeah.
It's like a legal echo reverberating through the decades.
I know.
It makes you wonder what Justice Holmes would think of all this.
Right.
I mean, he was pretty skeptical of courts second-guessing legislatures, right?
You're right to bring up Holmes's dissent.
Yeah.
It's incredibly relevant to these modern debates.
Okay.
Those who favor stricter regulations, even if the evidence is somewhat uncertain,
okay.
often invoke Holmes's arguments about deference to legislative judgments.
Good.
They'd say, look, lawmakers are elected by the people. They
right.
have access to experts.
Yeah.
And it's not the court's job to micromanage their decisions,
right.
especially when public health is at stake.
So it sounds like Weaver's become this battleground for competing interpretations.
It has.
Of how far the government can go in the name of protecting us.
Exactly. And that's what makes it such a fascinating and enduring case.
Yeah.
It's not just a dusty old legal document.
Right.
It's a living, breathing set of principles
yeah.
that we continue to grapple with as we face new challenges
yeah.
and try to strike that delicate balance between collective well-being and individual freedom.
Okay, I have to admit, I'm totally engrossed in this case now.
Good.
It's like we've stumbled onto this hidden legal gem.
Uh-huh.
And it's sparking all these fascinating questions about how our society works.
I'm glad to hear it. Sometimes the most unexpected cases can unlock the most profound insights.
For sure.
And Weaver is a prime example of that.
So where do we go from here?
Well,
what other modern day parallels can we draw from Weaver?
Well, one area where Weaver has been particularly influential is in the realm of environmental regulations.
Okay.
Think about debates around things like air quality standards,
yeah.
restrictions on certain pesticides,
uh-huh.
or even limits on carbon emissions.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
Those are all areas where the government is stepping in to protect the environment.
Right.
But those actions often have economic consequences for businesses and individuals.
Precisely. And that's where Weaver comes in.
Okay.
It provides a legal framework for challenging regulations that are seen as overly burdensome, arbitrary, or lacking a strong scientific basis.
Could you give us a specific example of how Weaver might be used in an environmental case?
Sure. Imagine a situation where the government wants to ban a certain type of fertilizer because of potential harm to water quality. A company that manufactures that fertilizer might challenge the ban using Weaver as ammunition.
Uh-huh.
They could argue that the government hasn't proven that the fertilizer poses a significant enough risk to justify an outright ban.
Okay.
Especially if the company can show that they've taken steps to mitigate any potential harm.
So it's not just about the existence of a potential problem.
Right.
But the proportionality of the government's response to that problem.
You got it.
Yeah.
Weaver reminds us that even when the government has legitimate goals, like protecting the environment or public health,
right,
their actions have to be measured and demonstrably justified.
This is really making me think about all the regulations we encounter in our daily lives.
Yeah.
And how Weaver provides a lens for critically evaluating,
right,
whether those regulations are truly serving the public good.
That's exactly the kind of critical thinking Weaver encourages.
Yeah.
It reminds us to be informed citizens, to question assumptions, and to demand evidence-based justification for restrictions on our freedoms,
yeah,
whether they're related to comforters, vaping products,
right,
or even the air we breathe.
I'm starting to feel like a legal eagle myself.
Good.
I never thought a case about shoddy would be so illuminating.
And that's the beauty of the law, isn't it?
Yeah.
You never know where a deep dive into a seemingly mundane topic might lead you.
All right. So we've explored how Weaver plays out in the context of modern day regulations.
Uh-huh.
But I'm wondering about something else.
Okay.
We've talked a lot about the legal and economic implications of this case.
Right.
But what of the social impact?
Hmm.
Did the decision in Weaver have any broader societal effects?
That's a really insightful question. Weaver definitely had broader social implications, especially when it comes to consumer perceptions and the evolution of industries. Think about it. Before Weaver, the very word shoddy carried this negative connotation. It was associated with cheap, inferior, and potentially even dangerous products.
Yeah, it's interesting how a word can become so loaded with meaning. Like, even today, if you call something shoddy, it's not exactly a compliment.
Exactly. But after Weaver, the perception of shoddy began to shift, at least to some degree. The court's emphasis on sterilization as a way to mitigate risk opened up the possibility of using recycled materials in a safer and more acceptable way.
So in a way, Weaver helped pave the way for more sustainable practices in the textile industry.
You could definitely argue that it forced people to think more critically about what actually constituted a health hazard and whether outdated assumptions were driving unnecessary regulations.
That's fascinating. It's like Weaver had this unintended consequence of pushing the industry towards more environmentally conscious practices, even though that wasn't the primary focus of the case.
Exactly. And that ripple effect is something we often see with landmark legal decisions. They can spark changes that go far beyond the specific issue at hand.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground with Weaver. We've talked about its legal reasoning, its impact on modern day regulations, and even its broader social implications. Mm-hmm. But before we wrap up, I want to bring it back to something you mentioned earlier, the idea that this case encourages us to be more informed citizens and to think critically about the balance between collective well-being and individual freedom.
That's the heart of it, really.
Hmm.
Weaver v. Palmer Bros. Is a powerful reminder that even in a society that values the common good, individual rights matter, and the government can't just trample on those rights without a solid justification.
It's like Weaver's giving us this set of tools for civic engagement. It's saying, hey, don't just blindly accept regulations, ask questions, demand evidence, hold your lawmakers accountable.
I love that interpretation. It's about empowering ourselves to participate in the ongoing dialogue about how we want our society to function. And that dialogue is constantly evolving as we face new challenges and grapple with complex issues.
Well, I have to say, I'm walking away from this deep dive feeling both enlightened and inspired. I never imagined a case about comforters could be so thought-provoking and relevant to our lives today.
Me too. It just goes to show that the law is woven into the fabric of our daily lives, even in ways we might not always realize.
Well, on that note, I think it's time for us to sign off to our listeners. I hope this deep dive has sparked your curiosity about the legal world and the enduring power of precedent. And the next time you find yourself snuggled up under a comfy comforter, take a moment to appreciate the complex legal history that went into making that cozy experience possible.
And remember, the pursuit of knowledge, like a good legal debate, is always worth the effort.